Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. I'm your host, Christina Frazier. This week's guest, Craig Wolf, president of the Heartland Renewable Energy Society, will discuss his thoughts on the impending climate crisis and share what he learned during his recent intensive training at Al Gore's Climate Reality Project, namely that man-made climate change is real and that there are things we can and must do to respond both as individuals and as a society. Tonight's show is recorded on Sunday, March 12th, at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church here in Kansas City, Missouri. Our show's format begins with our speaker's presentation and then concludes with a few final remarks and then the question and answer part of the program. You'll want to stick around and listen to the last segment. I feel the questions from the audience were particularly good and added a lot to tonight's talk. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's join the conversation here at 90.1 FM KKFI.
Good morning. Welcome to the forum. My name is Craig Violin. I'm a member of the forum committee. The forum exists to afford a platform for the discussion of significant issues, especially those which involve ethical values in the contemporary world. This morning we have Craig Wolf. Craig Wolf is president of the Heartland Renewable Energy Society and recently received intensive training from Al Gore's Climate Reality Project. Now, Craig Wolf also has a long history, probably 25 or 30 years around here, of as an activist for the Sierra Club and other groups promoting environmental issues. But in order to save time for his compelling presentation, I will not go into all that detail. So, Craig.
What first got me into energy was I was playing rock and roll back in the day, and I decided to build myself a passive solar home. And in the middle of building the home, the band broke up. So I began a new career before I needed one, and went on to build about 60 passive solar super insulated houses back when we cared about energy in the day. And so through many skips and leaps and bounds, I'm here today and going to talk about the climate crisis. And I'm going to start with this picture here, which is actually a Chinese symbol. And this symbol over here on the left, well, the whole symbol says this is the symbol for crisis. And it is a perfect symbol for what we're experiencing today because it's actually two symbols. The symbol on the left says danger, and the symbol on the right says opportunity. And there's really nothing that succinctly describes it where we're at right now better than that, because we are in danger of an existential crisis coming around the next century. We'll get into that later. But we also have a tremendous opportunity to solve not only the energy crisis, but other things that spin off from our habit of burning fossil fuels. So the question that I would ask, and this is the thing that frustrates me, is, if the climate crisis is really the climate emergency, is what we're seeing out there, does that represent what we're actually seeing our government leaders and you and I doing to solve that crisis? And we are so used to the planet Earth that we don't realize that it is not a permanent place. So I'm going to start this conversation, and I'm sure there's some brains out there that would know this, but I want to know what side of the fence you are on. Are you on the heliocentrism side of the fence or the geocentrism side of the fence? And it is kind of a trick question. Does anybody have any opinion regarding that? What does it mean? There we go. There. Okay. They're talking about in the time of Galileo, and he ended up going to, he was tried because he believed that the Earth was the center of the universe, was not the center of the universe, that it was the sun that was the center of the universe. And everybody else, the church and everybody else, said, well, no, it's obvious that the Earth is the center of the universe. Of course, it turns out that they were both wrong. They're really, it's hard to even say where the center of the universe is. But the point is that his trial was one of our first examples of a scientist who used analysis to figure out things, was ridiculed. And we can see plenty of that ridicule going on today with regard to the climate crisis, whether it's real or not. So let's delve into this a little bit more. This is a timeline of the Earth. And it starts there at the top at 12 o'clock noon and goes around where we are today. And we actually have, this is where we had two snowball Earths in here. That's pretty bizarre, two snowball Earths. But in here was where life actually began. And this little section right here is where the dinosaurs came and left. And this is where hominids started about 2 million years ago. And it's really kind of hard to see, so I'm going to... Yeah, you know, it's really still hard to see. Oh, there we are. That's where we have taken... It took some 4.5 billion years and created a circumstance that is a true miracle where everything is perfect to sustain life on the planet. And since we discovered fossil fuels, we have very quickly turned that into putting our very existence at risk. Now, I like this slide because right there is Earth. And it was taken by Voyager some 4 million miles from Earth. And I like this slide for two reasons. One, it tells us that we are really very alone in the universe, and there's going to be no knight on a white horse in shining armor to come and save our butts if we don't get our act together and fix things on Earth. It also tells us that this is truly a miracle planet, because we're what we've got here, we're so used to, but in the universe, it is so unique and so valuable. This is a picture of Apollo by Apollo 8. And I like to think as they came around the Earth, they looking out this little porthole in their capsule. And I like to think that when they came around and saw Earth for the first time, that the guy said, "Where's the camera?" And so he took this shot, the first shot by a human outside our atmosphere. And this is the most published photograph ever. It's called the Blue Marble. And the sun was right behind the camera, and the entire surface of the moon is lit up. Now we start getting into some of the science of this right here. And so here's the Earth. Here is our atmosphere. There's the sun. And the point of this slide is Carl Sagan used to say that if you, like in the classrooms, you have your globe, and if you would take that globe and shellac it with lacquer or shellac, that the thickness of that lacquer relative to that globe is about the same thickness of our atmosphere relative to the Earth. That is to say, it is very small, it is very fragile, and we need to do our best to take care of it. So a little bit of just climate change 101, atmosphere 101. You can see the atmosphere that surrounds the Earth there, and it's actually, in this depiction, larger or thicker than it actually is. But we have shortwave radiation in the form of light that comes to the Earth, and then it hits the Earth's surface and it warms it, and it is absorbed by it. But some of that energy, you can see that little arrow, some of that energy is radiated back into outer space. That's a good thing. And some of it is reflected back to the Earth. That's also a good thing. It's just perfect the way it is, or I should say the way it was. Now, if you look, I'm gonna thicken that atmosphere, and that represents what we're doing to the atmosphere. We're adding greenhouse gases. We like the greenhouse effect because if we didn't have it, we wouldn't be here today. But now you can see that there's more heat being reflected back to the Earth, and that's why we don't want the greenhouse gases, carbon and methane and others, to get up there in the atmosphere and ruin it for us. So carbon emissions from fossil fuels starting in 1850, you can see how carbon emissions have really spiked dramatically. And as CO2 increases, so does our temperature. You can see right now we're actually above that. We're up here somewhere now. We're above 400. And right here is 350. You've probably heard of an organization called 350.org. That organization used that name because that is the level we need to get back down to if we are to preserve our environment so it supports life the way we want it to support life. And you can see over here, You can see over here on this side that temperature follows the same path. So scientists are telling us that as our CO2 increases in the atmosphere, so does our temperature. So here's a little lesson in what's happening. This shows average temperatures, below average temperatures, and above average temperatures. And we're going to draw a line over the top of that because we're going to move that around. So this is showing several decades ending in 1980 to kind of get an average. So now the next decade slides over a little bit. Things are getting warmer. The next decade slides over a little bit further. We're getting warmer. Oh, what is going on over here? This is extreme temperatures. And we slide over a little bit further. And in fact, these temperatures in here used to cover 0.1% of the Earth. Now it's 10% of the Earth for those more extreme temperatures. So looking at what's happening to the Earth, 14 of the 15 hottest years, now that's 15 of the last 16 hottest years, were the hottest years ever, and 2015 used to be the hottest year on record. 14, 15, and 16 were the next. 16 was the hottest year ever. And probably the perfect example for what is really happening is looking at glaciers. This is a picture of a glacier taken in 36, and here it is recently in 2013, a nice lake. Here's a great glacier in Peru taken in 1978. And here it is now. So we're drastically changing. You all heard of the comfort index. You hear Mike Thompson as a weatherman talk about the comfort index. Well, it's 95 degrees outside, but the comfort index is 105 degrees, so don't do any work outside. Well, on this day in Iran, it was 165 degrees was the comfort index. And y'all remember a couple of weeks ago in Oklahoma, it was 100 degrees in Oklahoma in February. February is still winter. Last time I checked, we're in the northern hemisphere. Germany broke its all-time heat record in 2015. And across Europe in 2015, there were heat records that were over a three-day period or a four-day period were tied or broken. All across Europe. So things are definitely warming up. And of course, 90% of that heat is trapped by the oceans. And the bad thing about that is that because the oceans are absorbing that heat, it's becoming warmer, it's absorbing the carbon, that carbon is causing the ocean to become more acidic. And as the ocean becomes more acidic, if you're a little creature tooling around in the ocean, and the water starts getting more acidic, you're toast because your little shell dissolves. And so if you're the little creature that's a little bit bigger than him and you like to eat that smaller creature that used to have a shell, your food supply is gone. And this happens to the next level and the next level and the next level. And that's why ocean acidification very well may cause the oceans to die. This shows the global heat content of the oceans and how it has increased over time. And we all remember in 2012, our good buddy Hurricane Sandy that came and landed in New York, and that sucker was 1,500 miles in diameter. Now, I'm going to say this a couple of times. That storm and storms like it do not say we have got a climate crisis. But you take all those storms and you put them in a basket and you look at it over time and compare it with previous years, and we're beginning to see that we're entering a period of time where we are in the danger zone. So this is what New York and the financial district looked like then after Sandy. And so what is going on here? What is the linkage between the climate crisis and extreme weather events? Well, it's really simple. Nothing has really changed other than the physical dynamics of what's going on. We have the evaporation cycle, and then that we put more and more moisture into the atmosphere, and then it rains, and then it goes back to the ocean. So that's the hydrological cycle. So what is that really doing for us? Well, it's causing bigger and heavier downstorms, and also causing longer and deeper droughts. Evaporation from the ocean increases even more. As air gets warmer, it can hold more water vapor. Heavy downpours get even heavier, causing more flooding. And snowpacks melt earlier in the year, leading to spring flooding and less water in the heat of the summer. And these last two, let's take a closer look at, there are longer intervals in drought-stricken areas between downpours, making droughts even worse. And more water evaporates more quickly from the soil, making droughts deeper and longer still. So this next shot takes a look at the increase in severe weather events, severe downpours. And this, you may not be able to see that because of black on black or black on blue, but that's 71% in the Northeast in the last 50 years. So scientists tell us that's an example of what we're going to see more and more of. This was when 2 feet of rain in Florida happened in 26 hours. Extreme weather events. And then that same storm went up to Baltimore, supersaturated the soil, and this happened. And again, none of these events are by themselves an indication of a change in our climate. But you put them all together and look at them, and you begin to see. This is a storm that happened in Utah in 2015. Houston got hit 2 years in a row in May, the worst storm ever in 2015, and then the worst storm ever in 2016. But it's happening all over the planet, in Chile, in France, in Georgia near Russia, in Germany, in China, in Japan, and in India. It's happening everywhere. The other side of the coin, too much water, too little water. In Brazil, 140 cities were rationed water in the year before last, and a fifth of their population was affected by drought. And then, of course, we've had our own problems in the United States. California is trying to come out of an exceptional drought. This is their huge water supply for them, Folsom Lake, in 2011, and here's what it looked like in 2014. They were getting real nervous. CIA Director John Brennan said mankind's relationship with the natural world is aggravating existing world instability problems and is a potential crisis in itself. Last year was the warmest year on record, and this year is on track to be even warmer, and he ended up being exactly right. This is a farmer in Syria who had 400 acres of wheat that turned to desert, and in 2006 to 2010, the drought turned 60% of their soil into desert, and by 2010, 80% of their cattle had been killed. So this is an example of a crisis, a political crisis going on, and it was exacerbated by the climate crisis. Everybody moved to the city, chaos erupted, and then people were trying to escape, moving north, trying to get into Europe to save their families. Here's Miami. This happens on a regular basis in Miami. High tide brings in water, and people walk around in bare feet till it recedes. The canary in the coal mine is the insurance industry. They are changing their insurance policies. And here's in Florida, 6 inches, 2 feet, 3 to 4 feet, maybe 7 feet. If you've ever flown into Miami and looked out the window of the airplane, Florida is one flat place. It's going to be our first serious casualty for the climate crisis. $152 billion in property are at risk just by inundation of high tide in Florida. And then 80% of our coral reefs in the Caribbean and 40 to 50% of our coral reefs, they're kind of the incubator of life in the ocean, are already gone. Collectively, humanity is at the brink of making our oceans collapse. In the vast majority of our carbon reserves, scientists tell us we need to leave 70 to 80% of the known fossil fuel reserves in the ground if we are to stay below an increase of 2 degrees Celsius or 3.8 degrees Fahrenheit. So that means that the fossil fuel industry is in big, big trouble. Those reserves are worthless. Either they are worthless or they're going to bring them out and burn them and wipe out many species on the planet, possibly including us. So what's going to happen? Extinction rates occur when the current rate of species extinctions significantly exceeds the typical background rate or the normal rate of extinction. And what we are currently experiencing is 100 extinctions per million, or 1,000 now 1,000 times the normal background rate. And scientists are telling us it could be as much as 10,000 times the normal background rate. And now we introduce the climate crisis. In the Natural History Museum in Chicago, they had a history of the Earth that was partitioned by mass extinctions. And I got to the end of it, and it says, and the sixth mass extinction was started about 10,000 years ago. I'm like, the sixth mass extinction? What are they talking about? It was started about 10,000 years ago when humans began to be able to super compete with their environment. And because of our lack of judgment and lack of understanding, we are in a big mess right now, heading toward the sixth mass extinction. I call it the terrible icing on the extinction cake. Globally, this is part of the good news section here. Globally, wind could supply electricity needs 40 times over on the planet. And I love this statistic. If we could collect the sun, every drop of sun that hits the earth in 1 hour, we could power the planet for an entire year. All it takes is political will and scientific knowledge. We've got the scientific knowledge, we just don't have the political will. So we have amazing news at hand, but we're not going to get anywhere unless we can put a price on carbon and unless we can get deniers out of politics. We're going to have, on April 8th, we're going to have a guy from Rockport, Missouri. They're the first community to go 100% renewable, and he's going to give us a presentation on how they did it. We're also going to have a panel of solar experts, solar contractors, and they're going to tell us the differences of what we can do in our region right now. So I'm going to show this again later, but so mark that date in your mind. April 8th at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, we're going to have a presentation that shows what is actually possible to do right now. And there is little Rockport in the northwest corner of Missouri. Joining them is Greenberg, Kansas, Burlington, Vermont, Aspen, Colorado, and in 2017, Georgetown, Texas. More good news. Solar PV installations dramatically increasing. The cost of silicone crystals for solar cells dramatically going down. Solar and PV battery cost curves dramatically going down. And coal plants, the number one problem, have been stopped. The coal industry is dead. They don't know it yet, but they are dead. Well, I think they do know it. New electricity generation, look at wind and solar in 2014. Of new generation, they provided over half of it. And the next year, they provided three-quarters of it. And even in a hut in Africa, it's kind of comical, but what does that do for them? They can have their light in the tent from an LED light bulb. They can power their cell phone and join the rest of the world. So even in markets like that, solar plays a role. And it's happening all over the planet. Again, the good news, Pakistan, Germany, 78% of its electricity was generated on July 25th. Hawaii said that Hawaii is going to be 100% renewable by 2045. The Chilean market dramatically increasing in 1 year's time. Bolivia, Costa Rica, 100% for 100 days in 2015. Honduras, the Vatican is 100% renewable. They do have a couple of advantages, however. They are very small, And rumor has it that God is on their side. Here's China on a good day and China on a bad day. That's why China has turned the table, and conservatives don't have this excuse anymore that, well, why would we do anything if China's not doing anything? Well, China did something, and they are the largest producer of solar voltaic panels on the planet. So what would the world look like if we do not act in time? What would that look like? What would it look like if the oceans died, if farmers could not grow food, if our population centers and economic centers were covered with water and we had generated billions of refugees, if frozen water, melting water and snow, needed by 40% of the planet for its fresh water, disappeared? The world would be a Mad Max movie. And I want to focus on the bottom here. This is our most famous traitor. And this lack, the betrayal or trust of a confidence, a breach in faith, treachery. So I'm going to coin a new term here, and I'm going to repeat it for the next, till I die probably. Planetary treason. A person who betrays their duty to protect the survival of all species and civilization by willfully disregarding science for personal or political gain. Yep, that represents a lot of the other side. And we're back to our symbol, crisis, danger, and opportunity. So if the climate crisis is a real emergency, what should that look like? What can we do? Well, I want to talk briefly about the big three. Deniers need to be removed from making decisions for future generations and generations beyond them. We need to divest from fossil fuels. And then we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about meaningful and personal action. So, Craig, if you wouldn't mind handing that out so when I get to that we can begin to talk to it. But we all can do more than we're doing now. What we need to do is to be inspired, motivated to do that. And that is what my job is to get myself and everyone in this room and everybody I talk to, because I make these presentations several times a week around Kansas and Missouri. And so that's really important. And then for meaningful personal actions, we have renewable energy, that there are opportunities for renewable energy. There are huge opportunities for food, home energy efficiency. There's all kinds of things that you can do in your own home if you only knew how. And then lifestyle changes, being an activist and spreading the word. And one of the ways you can spread the word, I've got a sheet on the back there that you can pick up, that talks about the Climate Reality Project and my making presentations. So if you've got another organization or a business or another place where they have speakers, take a sheet and then call me, and I'll be happy to make a presentation for your group, no charge. So renewable energy, where to start? A good place to start is at energysage.com. I don't have those on my sheets yet, so you're going to have to remember that. Energysage.com. It really gives you the lowdown on what's happening now. And that's also why I want you to come to this meeting on April 8th at 10 a.m. at the Antioch Library, which is at Shawnee Mission Parkway in Antioch on the northwest corner, because we're going to have Bob Solger from the Solar Design Studio and the important contractors here locally that are going to tell you what they're doing, as well as Eric Cunningham from Rockport to tell you how they did what they did in Little Rockport, Missouri. But you can purchase a system. There are solar loans and solar leases. You have to read up on it and find out. We don't have enough time to go into the detail today. But solar loans and solar leases, there are renewable energy certificates for every unit of wind power that's out there. There is also a REC, or renewable energy certificate, that's associated with it. The good news is that the wind energy has been extremely strong, and a whole bunch of RECs have been produced. The bad news is there are so many that their value is not what it was hoped to be, from the standpoint that we want our activities to create additionality. That additionality means that as you do something, like if you get involved in community solar, that will create more renewable energy. So additionality is what we're looking for. And we're going to have people there that are going to talk about community solar and other things. So that is really an important thing for us to begin to understand. Another place I want you to go is shrinkthatfootprint.com. Shrinkthatfootprint.com. They have a wealth of information that is extremely well organized that help us with our everyday lives. And if you want to spend $18, you can download an 80-page document that will guide you through the process. And we're going to show some of the highlights from that. This is their table of contents that shows what they're going to talk about in that guide. And so this is what is a typical footprint. And of course, we're over here on this side, 20 tons of carbon per person. But and this shows surfaces, products, food, travel, and housing. So it shows you how this breaks down. And then here is another layer of humanity that doesn't have such a big carbon footprint, et cetera. So, and it goes into great detail about explaining that. But here's a good one. If we want to get to where we need to be by 2050, and this is BAU, stands for business as usual, this is what our footprint has to begin to look like. We have to move from here, where we are now, down to here. And what this guide tells us, if we really want to do this as individuals, because Lord knows we got 4 years where we're not going to do squat. If we really want to do this, we have to do more things like this, learn how to do these things. And so here is one of the easiest things, virtually no cost that we can do. We can stop eating meat. We'll be healthier, and especially red meat. This shows the carbon footprint of food diets for a meat lover, for an average person, for no beef, for vegetarian and vegan. So we can see that just by changing our diets, we can make a great contribution towards stopping what we're going headlong into, and that's a runaway climate. Also, with regard to home efficiency, back there in the back is also what I call the clipboard home energy checklist that was created by HRES, the Heartland Renewable Energy Society. And this will walk you through every room in your house. This is the attics and spaces, and here is a description of what to look for, and then you can make your comments over here. So if you're a do-it-yourselfer and want to take a section of the house and begin working on your own carbon footprint regarding to your house, that clipboard home energy checklist is the place to start. You may want to hire a contractor and have someone do an audit on your home. That's even better. But this will give you a guide as to what you can do right now by yourself. So, home energy efficiency, there's lots of things we can do there. Lifestyle changes, be an activist, spread the word. So I want you to take a look at your document there that you've got. We'll take a look at some of these real quickly. In your home, you got to wear 3 layers of clothes in the wintertime. And ladies, a bra don't count, just so when you're counting, a bra don't count. And in the summertime, you got to use fans to move air across your bodies. By the way, we're going to be meeting in the other room over here, and we're going to go into some of this stuff in a little more detail. Because one of the points that is needed is we need to take personal action, but we got to know what to do. Lifestyle changes, use human power for yard work. When you buy a new car, buy one that uses less gas. Hybrid, electrical vehicles don't do any good unless you're getting your power from renewable, your utility gets it from renewable energy, but that's what we got to work as activists to get utilities to buy into more and more and more renewable energy. So there's a whole bunch of things that we're going to be talking about as we go to the next room, but I wanted to point that out to you. Also, there's a fact sheet. I'm going to keep going here, and I'll talk a bit more. So join and get active. These are some environmental organizations that are super. And that is on our the big three on the bottom of that, Climate Reality Project, SierraClad350.org. And I want to focus a little bit on this organization here, the Climate Mobilization. What they're trying to do is create a mobilization like we had at the end of World War II. Pearl Harbor was bombed, and in the virtual blink of an eye, we stopped building cars and built tanks and airplanes. Immediately we did that. They had a crisis. It was recognized as a crisis. And if we don't think that the sixth mass extinction as existential threat to humanity and all species on the planet, if we don't think that's an emergency, then we're kidding ourselves. And the point is that the longer we wait, the more carbon gets in the atmosphere. And when it gets in the atmosphere, it stays there for a couple of centuries or more. So the longer we dilly-dally around and don't act as if it's an emergency, the worse it's going to get and stay that way. That's why this is so important. 32 degrees, 33 degrees, what happens? Well, water melts. And what happens is we're reaching a tipping point now where solar and wind is already cheaper than other forms of energy, but solar is approaching that tipping point across the planet. And when that happens, we're going to see markets change dramatically. So, in conclusion, we need to leave 70 to 80% of our carbon in the ground, and we need to keep guys like this, dare I say it, idiot, committing planetary treason. We need to keep him from making the decisions for your grandchildren and their grandchildren and their grandchildren. Climate is a moral issue. We need to move to wind, solar, hydro, and geothermal energy. Let none of us be timid. Let all of us decide to act. Thank you very much. And so here is one of the easiest things, virtually no cost that we can do. We can stop eating meat. We'll be healthier, and especially red meat. This shows the carbon footprint of food diets for a meat lover, for an average person, for no beef, for vegetarian and vegan. So we can see that just by changing our diets, we can make a great contribution towards stopping what we're going headlong into, and that's a runaway climate. Also, with regard to home efficiency, back there in the back is also what I call the clipboard home energy checklist that was created by HRES, the Heartland Renewable Energy Society. And this will walk you through every room in your house. This is the attics and spaces. And here is a description of what to look for, and then you can make your comments over here. So if you're a do-it-yourselfer and want to take a section of the house and begin working on your own carbon footprint regarding to your house, that clipboard home energy checklist is the place to start. You may want to hire a contractor and have someone do an audit on your home. That's even better, but this will give you a guide as to what you can do right now by yourself. So, home energy efficiency, there's lots of things we can do there. Lifestyle changes, be an activist, spread the word. So I want you to take a look at your document there that you've got. We'll take a look at some of these real quickly. In your home, you got to wear three layers of clothes in the wintertime. And ladies, a bra don't count, just so when you're counting, a bra don't count. And in the summertime, you got to use fans to move air across your bodies. By the way, we're going to be meeting in the other room over here, and we're going to go into some of this stuff in a little more detail. Because one of the points that is needed is we need to take personal action, but we got to know what to do. Lifestyle changes, use human power for yard work. When you buy a new car, buy one that uses less gas. Hybrid, electrical vehicles don't do any good unless you're getting your power from renewable, if your utility gets it from renewable energy, but that's what we got to work as activists to get utilities to buy into more and more and more renewable energy. So there's a whole bunch of things that we're going to be talking about as we go to the next room, but I wanted to point that out to you. Also, there's a fact sheet. I'm going to keep going here, and I'll talk a bit more. So join and get active. These are some environmental organizations that are super, and that is on the big three on the bottom of that, Climate Reality Project, SierraClad350.org. And I want to focus a little bit on this organization here, the Climate Mobilization. What they're trying to do is create a mobilization like we had at the end of World War II. Pearl Harbor was bombed, and in the virtual blink of an eye, we stopped building cars and built tanks and airplanes. Immediately, we did that. They had a crisis. It was recognized as a crisis. And if we don't think that the sixth mass extinction as an existential threat to humanity and all species on the planet, if we don't think that's an emergency, then we're kidding ourselves. And the point is that the longer we wait, the more carbon gets in the atmosphere. And when it gets in the atmosphere, it stays there for a couple of centuries or more. So the longer we dilly-dally around and don't act as if it's an emergency, the worse it's going to get and stay that way. That's why this is so important. 32 degrees, 33 degrees, what happens? Well, water melts. And what happens is we're reaching a tipping point now where solar and wind is already cheaper than other forms of energy, but solar is approaching that tipping point across the planet. And when that happens, we're going to see markets change dramatically. So, in conclusion, we need to leave 70 to 80% of our carbon in the ground, and we need to keep guys like this, dare I say it, idiot, committing planetary treason. We need to keep him from making the decisions for your grandchildren and their grandchildren and their grandchildren. Climate is a moral issue. We need to move to wind, solar, hydro, and geothermal energy. Let none of us be timid. Let all of us decide to act. Thank you very much.
That was great. Thanks a lot. We're now going to have questions and answers, and you all get one question until everybody has a chance, and no speeches. You can make speeches when we meet after the forum in the meeting room. So, Craig, you can take it away.
All right. Yes, sir. I think you're up.
How you doing today?
Thank you
so much for your presentation.
You bet. Glad to do it.
This is definitely the issue of our time.
You got that right.
I wanted to ask a little bit about the diet aspect.
Yeah.
I personally, a year ago, went vegan for nutritional reasons because I truly believe you can be healthier to the utmost extent by not eating animal products. But then I dug into the real climate impact of our diet. And it's so much more than just the red meat. But have you had any more deeper knowledge than the one couple slides you had about just red meat? And have you ever seen the documentary Cowspiracy by chance?
I have seen that.
That's a wonderful one. Yeah.
That is a wonderful one. And, you know, some of the information on some of these things is a little bit exaggerated, but, boy, it sure hits home that this is something that we have to do. We have to. And the great thing about your diet is, what does it cost you? It doesn't cost you anything. You know, a solar system on your roof costs you a lot, but changing your diet is almost free, and it has a significant impact in terms of its contribution to the climate crisis. Yes.
I'm sure you run into this every time you make a presentation, but so I wonder if you could kind of recap for the rest of us the arguments, the so-called arguments against global warming and the impact and the causes and all that sort of thing. There are probably half a dozen bullet points of what people tend to, they're consistently arguing about why we don't need to worry about this, and then what your response might be that would be.
Well, my response is really pretty simple. And I'm sure that Galileo's friends and family felt the same way. It's called science. And science in conservative circles is fashionable to say, well, I'm not a scientist. saying, I really don't know the information. Well, I'm not a doctor, but when I go to the doctor and he tells me I've got to do X, Y, and Z, then I kind of take his word for it. So 97% of scientists in peer-reviewed studies agree that the climate crisis is real, that it's caused by human activity, and it's something we have to change. So that's really the simplicity of the argument, is we have to get away from being I'm not sure that I believe in science. I have my alternate facts that I'd rather listen to. Hi, George.
Hi. Good to hear from you. What do you think of these so-called engineering solutions to reducing CO2 and or capturing CO2 with big tennis rackets full of calcium hydroxide and the like?
Yeah, well, it's an economic argument. They were gonna sequester coal or sequester carbon from coal plants, or we could just move to renewable energy. And rather than spend all this excess money that we can't afford, when we can do things right now that are cheaper than coal, it renewable energy, not even including the externalities of what burning coal does to our lungs and to people with asthma and children, not including those things, we're far better off going with the cheapest, most cost-effective way of generating our energy. Not to mention all the things we have to do to conserve energy. You and I have to get better at it. You have to get better at it. We have to reduce our footprint. Yes?
I noticed that one of the solutions you left out was nuclear power, and I wondered the reason
why
for that. And it seems that from what I've seen or read that there may be some that it may be more a viable solution going forward as that technology has changed. And what your thoughts are?
Well, my thoughts are pretty simple, and they're very similar to the last one. I mean, we can build a nuclear power plant, and they're always over budget by 50% or 100%. They always cost more than they say they're going to cost, and they're very expensive for the energy they produce. Or we have a technology that we're using right now. Kansas is the Saudi Arabia of wind. It's cheaper than building a nuclear power plant. So, the technology is cool, I guess, but we still don't know what we're going to do with the nuclear waste. And here we have a technology that we can use right now that's cheaper than those alternatives. So, again, it kind of gets down to economics and just kind of waking up and stop listening to lobbyists that are trying to sell you something. Yeah.
With your expertise, it might be nice to hear, what do you think might happen over the next 20, 30 years to our region? What would be some of the effects that we might see that would impact our daily lives?
We're going to get hot. Now, I mean, who knows what's actually going to happen, but all we can do is look at the models from scientists who really understand this stuff. But Kansas is going to be a lot hotter. You're not going to be able to grow food that you could grow before. You know, if you're a farmer and you have 3 days of 103 degrees, well, your plants can probably make it through that. But if you're a farmer and you have 7 or 8 days of 103 degrees, your crop is toast. So heat is what we're going to be experiencing. And, you know, what's going to happen is going to vary all over the planet. Some people are going to get too much rain. Some people are not going to get enough rain. And I just don't want to find out. Everybody with gray hair out there, we're not going to see the chapter. We're not going to see the final chapter of this, because the final chapter is really going to start being written around 2040, 2050, 2100, 2200. That's when we're really going to start seeing the end of this book. Other questions?
One of the simplest things that people can do to help is to change a light bulb. Could you go over briefly the amazing changes in technology for lighting that people can take advantage of?
Yeah, I mean that's the real one. It's in this one document here, the one you want to be sure you want to take home, all of them. But actions for individuals to take for the climate emergency, changing light bulbs is so obvious. CFLs were brought onto the market, and they were so strong that they're going to stop making incandescent light bulbs. And then come along LEDs, which have a little bit better performance than CFLs, but the benefit from them is that they last for years and years and years. So if you've got a CFL, don't run in there and unchange it and put in an LED. When it burn, you know, but get a stack of LEDs so that when they do run out, you can switch them. And if you're like me, if I've got a light that's way up high on the outside of the house, I'm probably going to go ahead and change that while I can still get around. Because when that CFL burns out, I may not be able to get up there to change it. But by the time an LED burns out, my ashes will be somewhere floating around.
You talked a little bit about how changes in climate would affect ocean life, but I'm thinking about warmer temperatures and how insects that might normally die off don't die off. How will things like that affect humans, and also what impact would it have on disease, spreads of diseases?
They're going to dramatically increase, and by the way, we can all just do a little experiment this year because we had a nice warm winter. And so just take a look at the bugs that you're going to be experiencing out there and know that is going to be compounded. I mean, that's the danger of this thing, is that as more and more carbon gets up there and stays up there, that each decade, for whatever criteria you're looking at, is going to get worse and worse and worse. And disease and bugs are going to be part of that scenario. In other words, now is when we got to do this. And we, you know, as much as we work as individuals to change things and to change our own personal lives, we are going to have government play a huge role in making a mobilization to the climate emergency as if it were an emergency. Like we had in World War II, where we changed our industry. We need to change our energy industry like we changed our auto industry in 1941.
The ultraviolet emissions from LEDs, is that?
I don't know a thing about ultraviolet emissions. But maybe if you come to the session afterward, there may be some people that are smarter than me that can't answer that. More questions?
Any thoughts on ozone depletion?
You know, I think that's one area, and George, you I'm sure know more about this than I do, but I think we that was called by chlorofluorocarbons, and I think that we may have solved that pretty much. Do you agree with that? No, we don't agree with that. Why don't you get up here and tell us about that? Yeah, all right. But it certainly isn't what it used to be. They have made improvements on it, but its exact status, I have not dug into that one. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for being here this morning. This has been extremely informative.
Thank you.
So Scott Pruitt is our secretary of the EPA. And the reading I've done is that the appointees he has so far join him in being climate change deniers.
Yes.
What can we do? You've given us a lot of things we can do to reduce our footprint, but what can we do to support your first suggestion that we not allow deniers to be in government?
Well,
we start at a local level.
Yeah, it is local level. It's elections. We have to get more active in elections. I was involved in Sierra Club last year, and we actually had fundraising parties, and we invite our 1,700 members or 2,300 members to come to a fundraising party, and we let the handful of candidates that we were endorsing also know about it, and we ended up with more candidates there than we had Sierra Club members. Frustrating as hell. So we need to get a lot more active. Now, the silver lining in the Trump phenomena is that people are coming out of the woodwork to become active. And so being active and letting your voice be heard and scaring the bejesus out of these climate deniers, that they've got to stop. We've got an administration that has put the Max Tillerson, the head of Exxon, as Secretary of State. We've got Scott Pruitt, who has sued the EPA and wants to dismantle the EPA as head of the EPA. And then we've got Rick Perry, the guy who couldn't remember the department that he's ahead of now, the Department of Energy, and he didn't even know what the Department of Energy did. So those three are the big three, and probably Max Tillerson is the smartest of them, the best of them, that's not totally bad, but certainly Pruitt and Rick Perry are the worst of the worst. And then, of course, you just kind of go down the list and you find, you know, DeVos is the head of Department of Education, and she's doesn't like public education. And so, of course, the person who doesn't like public education, you put her in charge of it. And for protecting the planet and the climate and the environment, you put the guy who wants to demolish the EPA. And by the way, do you all remember that the EPA was started by Nixon? This is crazy. Yes.
I believe your background is in sustainable buildings or super insulation buildings.
My background started, well, it's a philosophical background, first of all. It's a priority, but I started out by building passive solar homes,
right.
Passive solar super insulated homes, and that's where my passion has remained over the years is in energy.
Sure. So my question to you would be, how do you see the changes in technology affecting our consumption of, like, how do we plan better to reduce, you know, from a capital kind of...
Yeah, capital investment.
Yeah, capital investment.
You know, it's going to fall on us, because what you're talking about is what are our priorities going to be? For instance, what we're doing to the rainforest. They're chopping down rainforest so that they can grow more cattle, which is red meat, which we need to be eating less of. So all across the board, we need to change our priorities so that we protect this planet. And I forgot where my next thought was going to go. But it really is up to us to spread the word, to become disciples of saving the planet, not only from an energy standpoint, from an environmental standpoint, that, like that one slide showed, we have such a miracle planet, and what took 4.5 billion years to put in place in about 170 years, we've done a pretty good job of beginning to dismantle the nature that created this miracle, that life could expand to the extent it already has.
Thank you.
We have time for one more quick one.
Real quick.
So the argument that often wins the day is the economics. And so the consistent argument against being concerned about climate change or doing anything about it is because economically there's this argument to be made that it's going to cost us so much money. And I suspect that there's an equal and opposite argument why economically it's in our best interest to combat.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you could just address that.
Now, jobs. We have a crumbling infrastructure, and they don't talk about the infrastructure of our energy grid that would make it so much more efficient. And if we would take our energy grid and make it renewable, the jobs, compare those jobs to the fossil fuel energy jobs, it dwarfs them. So it's jobs from an economic standpoint, and from a just buying the energy. It's cheaper already, let alone all the jobs it creates. So it's a win-win-win-win-win.
Thank you, Craig. That was great. And in appreciation. All right. And in lieu of a real honorarium, we're going to give you our forum cup.
My last cup is... I broke it.
Oh, great.
So I've got another All Souls Cup. Thank you.
All right.
I hope you enjoyed Craig Wolf's presentation on the climate crisis and his case for immediate action. Next week's topic is asthma, a condition that plagues many inner-city residents, especially children. Our guest Erica Forrest, supervisor for the Environmental Health Department at Children's Mercy Hospital, will assess the scale of the problem in our metro area and what's being done to address it. This program was recorded on Sunday, March 12th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. All Souls Forum is edited and produced for broadcast by Christina Frazier. Our theme song was composed, performed, and recorded by musician Fred Potter. This program will be available for podcast within 10 days of broadcast on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Remember, you can find archived All Souls podcast and many other interesting and enlightening public affairs programs produced by KKFI on the KKFI website. Thanks for joining us this evening, and we hope you tune in next week, same time, same place, where we will continue the conversation here at 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station.